The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 554, recorded on November 19th, 2019.
The 554th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 387th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dinser.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So we didn't have a podcast last week, and I actually managed to post all of the podcasts. I said on last week's pod, not last week's, but 2 weeks, last podcast, that I might just, you know, post them later, but I posted all three of them, so no one's missing anything. Just two of them are incredibly late. I have some really very sad news that just came on the wire. Brad McQuaid passed away, and for those who don't know who he was, he was the guy who basically invented the MMO as we know it. He was one of the people, key designer for EverQuest. I know there were other MMOs and mushes like Ultima Online before it, but EverQuest basically codified everything that we would expect from an MMO. So he was actually in the process of doing a crowdfunding for a new MMO called Pantheon. It's going to continue, but Pantheon's Twitter said, it's with deep regret we share that Brad McQuaid passed away last night. He will be deeply missed and forever remembered by gamers worldwide. I won't talk about the circumstances of his death because that's kind of murky right now. But he was 51 when he died. So that's a major part of the video game industry that is gone. I haven't really looked at Pantheon, actually. I should investigate it.
That's a super bummer. Yeah. Like, EverQuest started it all. EverQuest was World of Warcraft before World of Warcraft.
Well, yeah, I mean, World of Warcraft basically took everything that worked with EverQuest and tossed out everything that didn't work, and first EverQuest, there was a lot of stuff that did not work. And for a mood change, we also want to announce that Google Stadia is on its deathbed already, and we will mourn its passing.
Oh, my God.
Google Stadia was released the other day, and it is getting some really bad reviews.
I mean, I'll say this. Microsoft came correct with Project xCloud when they did their announcement on it. And it was like right after Google Stadia had announced their games that Microsoft was like, hey, we know that you're pissed off about Stadia. Check out what we've got going on in streaming gaming. And that was like – it was like kicking Stadia while it was down, yeah. and also using it as a footstool to climb higher.
Yeah. And I don't know if you watched the X19, but I was watching what they have coming up for Game Pass. And it had so many holy shit moments. Like, for one thing, all of the Final Fantasies are coming to Game Pass. All of them.
Yes.
And so are the first three Yakuzas. And for PC Game Pass, my jaw hit the floor when I saw that Age of Wonders Planetfall is coming to Game Pass. That's something I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, they really knocked it out of the park with a lot of those reveals. I really enjoyed the Wasteland 3 trailer.
Yeah, that too. Although I backed that, so I'm not eligible. And oh, by the way, another thing that Microsoft did to answer Stadia, guess what? For $1, you can get 3 months of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
Yes.
And by the way, that includes people who are already subscribing to the Ultimate, which means I was on that like white on rice.
Yeah, they did a really good job with that whole thing. It was it was a lot of good, interesting information. It made 2020 sound like it's going to be a pretty big year for Xbox.
Well, they made a big deal about The Witcher 3 coming. And, you know, here's the thing. Microsoft's doing something that Sony is not. And an article, I think it was in The Verge, was talking about it, is that Microsoft has all of its first-party titles day one on Game Pass, which means stuff like Microsoft Flight Simulator, which looks amazing, and Minecraft Dungeons, and Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and Bleeding Edge, you know, Sony fans are saying, well, when is The Last of Us Part II coming out on Game Pass? And the guy who's running this server said, well, soon, maybe like a year after, maybe. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of stuff coming out. And one of the things they found, Microsoft and Epic and some other people when they're doing they found that people buy more when they're on a Game Pass, and they try games they would never try, because here's the thing, I've never played the Talos Principle. It's coming to Game Pass, I might as well try it.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of indie developers saying that, like, being on Game Pass, they're seeing almost as many players as they did on Steam. Like, where Steam used to be, like, the bread and butter, they're seeing a substantial amount of users. I mean, when you've got the game free to play in your library, people are more willing to check it out.
Now, here's the thing. For those of you who don't know, Game Pass is sort of like Netflix. So what happens is they cycle out. So if you really like a game and it's being cycled out, you must, oh, you know what? I'm just gonna have to buy it now. Since I play it a lot, I might as well keep it. And also, you know, Age of Wonders Planetfall is also coming to console, which is also a shocker.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually finally showed Age of Wonders. They showed Age of Wonders Definitive Edition, which is coming to the or Age of Wonders 2 Definitive Edition, which is coming to the Game Pass. And then they also finally showed a trailer for Age of Wonders 4, which is it too late for that game, or is it still, like, do you think that'll still do well?
You mean Age of Empires 4?
Age of Empires, you're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's excited about Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition. Yeah, it's here's the thing. You know, Age of Empires 3 is kind of underrated. I was ambivalent about it because it wasn't as open-ended, but there's a lot of people who like that game. So
they had an article the other day that were saying that Age of Empires 4 won't have microtransactions, and I'm just sitting here like, who was concerned about that?
Well, if you know about the announcement of Diablo 4, yeah, you should be concerned about that.
I mean, like, I don't know. That seems like an entirely different
Diablo
type of
4
game.
Diablo 4 always on, and yeah, we're going to microtransaction the shit out of that. Here's also something a little bit more sketchy about Diablo 4. It's not due for a few years, which tells me, Blizzard just said, oh, we're gonna tell people about Diablo 4, even though we haven't really started on it, just to get our people's attention away from Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Diablo 4
could, too, which is just going to be a glorified update.
Diablo 4 could really be a game changer if they do it right. But
it nearly fucked up Diablo 3. They had to change that game so much after its launch.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they don't do it right, they're going to be super fucked. But
well, here's the thing. They have 3 to 4 years to just stew on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point they may decide, you know what, we're just going to do a normal Diablo 4 because nothing else is working.
They are using an all-new engine for this one. I got a glimpse at the other day. Basically, it doesn't sound spectacularly different. They call it a full physics rendering, which, I mean, like, basically they're taking it from an artsy game to a full 3D game.
I don't care. I have no interest in Diablo 4 while Diablo 2 still exists.
I think that's the case for a lot of people, but I don't know. Like, depending on how they do it, they could really knock it out of the park.
They made Diablo 2 too good.
or they could completely fail. If it doesn't bring as much, if not more, to the table as Diablo 2 did, then I don't see them making another Diablo for a very, 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 very long time, if ever.
Well, let's get back to Stadia. One of the problems, and people sort of got suspicious right away, was that Stadia never really talked about what games are going to be on it. You know?
Yes.
And they were kind of sort of vague about, well, I don't have a 4K TV. Oh, that's okay. You know, there was a lot of stuff that they really didn't talk about Stadia, which is why I'm not surprised that it's not doing well.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the games were underwhelming. Like, there are games that, like, have mostly been out for a pretty long time. There weren't any surprises in there. There wasn't anything spectacular in there. Like, there was nothing in there that made me say, oh my god, I gotta go get myself a Stadia. What am I doing?
Why does it like, reek of Valve's console?
And meanwhile, it also, like... Excuse me. It also didn't, like, it didn't really have much on it that would, like, I don't feel like it's going to push the Stadia. Like, I don't feel like it's going to really, like, test out how well that whole streaming service works.
Well, this isn't the first time, you know, you've had something like this on PC. So, it's not surprising that, you know, you'd think that they would. Here's the thing. The internet is Google's thing. They should be all about this. And yet, they, you know, even Amazon did better with their stuff. And hey, you know, here's the thing. Apple's killing it with their service because they curated the shit out of that. And a lot of games that are coming out of, what is it, Apple TV? Is they calling it Apple TV or something else?
Apple Arcade.
Apple Arcade, you know. Like, Goose Game is just going nuts, and is that other game. You know, it's like... The games that they curated on Apple Arcade are doing extremely well.
Wild Hearts or Sayonara Wild Hearts is up for like four different game awards this year, which rightfully so. It has a really, really good soundtrack, really good art design. That game is amazing for a mobile game.
Although I will say this, you know, Microsoft knew, everybody knew what Google was up to. I mean, people don't seem to understand this, but there's a lot of communication that goes between companies. And Microsoft and Apple decided we're going to head Google off at the pass and come see this. That's what. And let's not even talk about Microsoft's streaming service, right? Let's talk about Game Pass. Microsoft knew that this was where it was headed. So did Apple, which is why they did their own version of Game Pass. And what's frustrating for a lot of PlayStation owners that I've spoken to is that Sony was doing the Game Pass before everybody, and yet they're lagging behind somehow.
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time you heard anything really all that spectacular about PlayStation Now?
Well, that's because they keep on waiting. See, I get part of it is because they're in front. You know, they sold a billion consoles, you know, so they're not feeling any pressure to release first-party games day one. And that's what happens to Microsoft when they fuck around with the announcement of the Xbox. You know, the Xbox One back in 2013, and it forced them to, okay, you know what, we screwed over, the customers feel screwed over, so we're going to have to do overtime to get their trust back. And it's not, Halo's not going to cut it. So they said, you know what, we're going to start giving away free games, we're going to do a Game Pass, we're going to do all this consumer-friendly stuff, you know, because we got to catch up. And it did, and it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, the next generation is going to be very interesting to see what PlayStation 5 and Project Scarlet are going to do and whatever Nintendo decides on doing. We still don't know what Nintendo's going to do. What?
Oh, it broke up for just a sec there.
We still don't know what Nintendo's going to do. Are they going to make they say they're going to do another handheld, like the 3DS, or they're going to do a Switch 2, or they're just going to do a new... You know, we don't know what Nintendo's going to do. Usually when it comes up to... following popular hardware, they botch it left and right. We saw that with going from the SNES to the 64. We saw that going from the GameCube to the Wii. You know, I mean, yeah, the original Wii was selling it for the first 2 years, and then it just dropped dead. And then they followed up the Wii with the Wii U, and it got even worse. So it's like the Switch. Everybody felt like the Switch was going to be their last chance, and they managed to, you know. And I think they really went out to the Steam third-party guys and say, hey, listen, why don't you make some games for us? I know that The Binding of Isaac isn't exactly what people think of when they play on Nintendo, but we want The Binding of Isaac on the Switch.
Yep. And then they set a precedent for not – well
– although, I mean, really, it's a gross version of Zelda, so I guess it works.
They set two precedents for the Switch, one of which is good. It's an indie playground. It's a really good place for indies to go, and everybody wants to release their game on the Switch now. It's also it's also becoming a shovelware pit.
Well, that's what happened to the Wii. See, that's what happens, you know. Okay, whatever you might think about the Nintendo seal of approval, which was basically a way to, you know, gouge money from third-party developers, you know, to get the license. But at least it weeded out all the pretenders, you know, that Nintendo seal of approval. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't inevitable that it would turn into Steam, but it's becoming that.
Nintendo took a seal, or Nintendo took a club to the seal of approval. The seal is dead.
Like I said, we just still don't know what they're gonna follow up the Switch with. While who knows? Who knows? They may follow up with nothing and just say, you know, we're gonna go our way because we have a certain. We have a certain console gamer that we appeal to.
For sure. I mean, like, the nth Pokemon game isn't all that graphically appealing, but
the Pokemon game is getting beat over with in the woodshed right now by people. They are really pissed off.
It depends on who you talk to. There's a small section of people that are pissed off, and there's a much larger section of people that are enjoying the shit out of it.
There's another section that are making mods for it.
Yes.
To restore. But then again, you know, I don't want to sound down on Nintendo players, but a lot of them don't care. They don't care about quality. They just want the Pokemans. Oh, look, it's Pikachu. That's all they care. And they don't even turn him into Raichu for some reason.
He turns into
Pikachu.
A Pikachu. He turns
don't
into
like Kaiju.
Pikachu.
He's not as cute.
He turns into Kaiju Pikachu.
Oh, who's the other one? The one that comes before Pikachu now. The little
Pichu. Yeah,
Pika. I think it's Pika or Pichu, right.
Pichu. Yeah.
Because they needed another doll.
Uh-huh.
But anyways. Getting back to Stadia, you know, I don't know what Google can do right now. I really don't. I mean, with something like this, you have to hit it out of the ballpark first swing, and they just whiffed badly.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they're Google. But then again, we said the same thing about Valve, and look what happened to the Valve console.
It depends on if – I mean, at the end of the day, Google does have the money, but it depends on how much of them they're willing to put behind that, especially if people like Microsoft come out and do it far better and nobody cares anymore.
By the way, there's been a lot of complaining about the Switch's online service too. I've seen a lot of videos talking about how the store has improved a little bit, but everything else is just crap. I'm just picturing Microsoft around the corner like a drug dealer opening its trench coat with Xbox Live and say, hey, Nintendo, you know, we got one of these if you want to improve your online play.
Did you hear about the bug on Pokemon Sword and Shield where it actually like crashes Roku boxes?
No.
The online features for Pokemon Sword and Shield crash Rokus.
Okay. it's just Nintendo. Here's the thing, and someone pointed this out to me, and it made me slap my head and say, of course. So let's talk about Japan. Japan, when you want to do an internet service, you don't have to worry too much about coverage because it's very dense. You know? You only have to go at best 100 miles from one end of the island to the other. I don't know the actual dimensions of Japan, but I'm just saying. But when you have the United States, that's 2,400 miles from coast to coast. and there's going to be a lot of drop off. So you have to have a huge internet, system. And if you don't, Nintendo is still Japan first. So people in Japan, from what I hear, have no problems with their online there. Absolutely none.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a country like the United States, you have to have better. You have to have better architecture. Sony knows this. Sony deals with Europe and North America as much as it does Japan, because basically Nintendo's their biggest rival. Here's the thing. In Japan, in outside of Japan, it's Microsoft that they're dealing with. So you might know this. I think Sony Japan and Sony America have a better relationship than Nintendo Japan and Nintendo America, because I'm pretty sure Nintendo America is telling Nintendo Japan all about this, and Nintendo Japan can't be bothered. It's working well here. That's what destroyed Sega. Sega Japan would not listen to Sega America. You can do the research. We're not going to get into it. That'll be a gaming history thing about how Sega Japan basically fucked over the Genesis and the Saturn and the Dreamcast, because they would not listen to the Sega America. The guy in America was an absolute genius. I forgot his name, but he took everything and made it just work. He was the one who invented Sony. Sega does what Nintendo don't. Anyway, we're talking an awful lot about Stadia here, or at least about stuff that has nothing to do with Stadia's fucking up. That's basically what we're saying. Google screwed up.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen much about Xbox's streaming stuff, because streaming doesn't appeal to me that much. But I know a lot of people are excited about it.
I mean, they have a much, 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 much better library than Stadia.
I mean, what does Google have? Google does not make their own games. Well, they do make their own games, but Microsoft has a lot of first and third party software that they can do. I mean, if you want to play Rage 2 on your cell phone, go right ahead.
Like, Tekken 7 was the surprising one they announced for xCloud, because Tekken 7 is a game that requires, like, pinpoint inputs. And so I was like, that's telling me, like, wow, Microsoft is confident enough to believe that they could that you could play a Tekken game feasibly and functionally on a...
You know what would really impress me is if they start doing with Halo. Because I'm going to tell you something. Halo gamers thinking, you know what, we can play Halo competitive online on our cell phones. That's that's catnip for them. That's their catnip.
I think they added Halo 5 to the list.
Yeah, it's they added Halo 5 to the I know they added it to Game Pass.
They added it to the xCloud list too.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that there's a lot of gamers who are really super happy about Halo Master Chief Collection coming to PC. And Halo Reach has an official release date for PC, December 3rd.
Yep.
So we're boring the hell out of Scott.
I think Scott crashed out.
Oh. Well, we'll see if we can get it back in. Because there's too much we're talking about that we can't just stop. Let me do a quick message. He can't heal very well. I can't do the recording. Just continue without me for this recording. Okay, Scott. So we had a cameo by Scott. Which means we're going to have to... he can't hear? But how about just speaking? Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyways, let's talk about what we've been playing. I was playing Greedfall. And it was
so close.
Yeah, there was one part when I was level 15 that just made me rage quit. Here's the thing. I will not mind playing the game again sometime with the same save file. It's just that something happened that pissed me off so much that I decided, that's it. I'm done. Out. I want to start something new. So, I will say it shares a lot with Mass Effect Andromeda. In terms of the way you traverse the world, except not as dull. I don't like the characters. The characters bore me. I can see where the story is going. I also would rather they allow you to level up more features faster. Because, you know, I very wisely decided to put all 3 points into charisma and one into intuition, because that got me a lot of dialogue choices that just sped me through a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
The world is interesting. I wouldn't mind getting back to it. It feels like a AA game because that's exactly what it is. It doesn't have any of the money that are backed by, say, Mass Effect games, and which is a real indictment about Mass Effect Andromeda, because they had a crap ton more money and they still did worse than Greedfall. I would like to see these guys do another game that's basically like Greedfall, just not with this plot, characters, or setting. Something else that's a little more interesting.
Yeah. Like, that's what I heard from a lot of people on Greedfall, is that it wasn't that it was bad, it's just that it wasn't anything special. Like, the concepts and the foundation are there, but, like, when it comes to, like, the combat, I heard boring.
The combat is easy. Because here it is. Ready? Here it is. Swing, roll, swing, roll, swing, roll, fire a gun at enemies that are... I put most of my abilities into guns. There's magic, and there's the one game that I never even tried to basically be a magic user in. Strange. I think that's Scott trying to barge his way back in. We're still here for you, Scott.
Oh, no, that might have been just me scratching the side of my head. but
you can pre-order Cyberpunk 2077 on Xbox.com. Interesting.
You know, you can do the whole swing, roll thing, but it better be but it's got to be From Software hard. Because that's basically what a Dark Souls game is.
Yeah, here's the thing. I didn't play in the hardest difficulty, so I wouldn't know. I think the way I gather is that you'll get if you play on a harder level, you just be downed in 2 hits. So it's not that they're smarter; it's just that they hit harder, and you probably have to hit them longer. One boss was a real drag, and I really hate this. When the difficulty of your boss isn't that he's smarter or he hits harder, it's just you have to hit him so much, and the game is basically daring you not to get bored enough to quit. You know those slogs in which someone has a billion hit points, they don't do much damage to you, and they're not really that hard to evade. So all it is you just having to whack, 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 whack them.
Oh, you mean every MMO endgame content ever?
Oh yeah, but it's not forgivable in a I also since I have a new computer, and yes, I got my computer, and I'm already thinking about filling in another card so I have 24 gigs instead of 16 gigs RAM. I'm going to start Deus Ex Mankind Divided again, because before my computer was not equipped to handle it. And it's just as boring, even though I can move now, as it was when I first tried. So I'm probably not going to dwell on that. New game. I got back into State of Decay 2 because I heard they patched it up. So I'm going to give it a try again. And here's the thing. I was having a lot of fun when I first played it. A lot of fun. What ruined it for me were the bugs. It just made me want to throw my PC out the window. So I'm playing State of Decay 2 again, and I'm starting from scratch, you know, because I need to do the tutorials again. And the new game I'm playing is one that's on Game Pass. It's called The Final Station. It's a retro-type game in which you're on a train, and you have survivors, and you have to shoot zombies. They're not called zombies, but they may as well be called zombies. And there's a lot of puzzle elements to it. Also, when you're on the train, you have to make sure everything's working. You have to constantly move around and make sure that you make Equilibrium stay or else the people in your thing will die. You have to make food so that they don't starve. That sort of stuff. It's okay.
How far are you?
I think I'm at the point right after, not after, but like one station after the station that follows the one in which things go to shit.
Mm.
And now I'm having to run through places filled with zombies and figure out how to evade them. And I learned that, you know, you don't have to shoot all of them because if you run by them, they'll swing and miss. It's when they really get into huge crowds that they become a danger. Or, of course, the little fast ones, in which you do have to shoot those because they will kill you with a few whacks. So it's okay. It's doing the Dark Souls method of a story, in that the environment tells you the story. You know, like a system shock in which, you know, you hear people talking. Nothing directly is inferred, but you can guess what's going on, basically. There is one great moment, one great creepy moment, in which you're carrying the military package for the first time, and there's two soldiers in the train with you, and they speak to you briefly, and then you go through a tunnel really quickly. And when you come out of the tunnel, they're gone, but there are bloodstains all over the seats.
Yes.
So that was a fun little moment.
The whole thing is I played it from beginning to end.
Okay.
I played it twice. And
So the achievement I have is Station A45, but I think I'm well beyond that.
I will save you some time. There, it gives you choices, but the ending is the same, no matter what you do. That's one of the things that I held against it, was that, why give me choices if it doesn't make any difference?
Yeah.
That said, it's a good game. I like it. It had an interesting story.
It is so indie, it's not even funny. It is an indie. It might as well stamp in big letters, INDIE, indie! It is so indie-ish, it's not even funny, because you can do all the check marks. It even has the limbo thing of having creatures that are completely black with just their eyes showing.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. But State of Decay 2, once again, I'm starting to get really into it. I just hope the bugs don't ruin the experience for me.
Well, hopefully if they patched it up proper, it should be a better romp, I'd think.
Yeah. So, what have you been playing? I want to hear that you've been playing the new Star Wars game.
I haven't.
Oh, okay.
Instead, I was playing... I went back to the Professor Layton series. They just released a new one.
See, now you wish Scott was here, because that gets him excited.
It's a set of puzzle games. Really good animation in those games, and some pretty good voice acting, too. I think that's part of the what I've liked about those games for the longest time, is they have good voice actors. They have, almost like French animation studio cutscenes, and they have it's a ton of puzzles. That was fun. I did that for a review this last week. It just came to the Switch. Outside of that, I've been plucking away on Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Man, that game has pissed off a lot of people. I have friends that
Yeah, it really is a bad game. A, it's short. B, it's stupid. Those are its two biggest problems. Short and stupid.
The multiplayer, I like it. I like the multiplayer because, compared to other games, it feels relaxing and cathartic to just, you get killed, you go back in. There's no stakes. You don't have to start a whole new game. I think that's the thing, is that I've been playing Battle Royale so much lately, where the stakes are so high if you lose just one time, you have to start all over again, that it feels just oh, cool, I died, I'm back in, and let's go have another romp and see if I can take a couple people with me. I have a few friends that are just in my opinion, taking it a little too seriously, just because there's a shotgun in the game that literally annihilates anyone that gets in front of it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's so short that people said that the demo they played at E3 was three quarters of the entire game.
I can see that. It's not a very long campaign, and they try to like brush it. They try to spruce it up by saying that, well, we've got special ops for you so that you can play more story after the story is over. But I'm going to say it right now. The special ops co-op mode is like a cheap narrative, a cheap slap on compared to what is going on in the campaign.
Do you feel betrayed? Because I know you love the first two games.
No, because I went in there mostly to play the multiplayer, and it feels fun as far as the multiplayer goes. I'm not one of those people that goes in hoping that, like, Call of Duty's story is going to wow me, because it's usually almost always about Americans be good, Russians be bad. Also, there's lines of gray in between. Let's go cross them. That is almost always the Call of Duty story of let's go commit war crimes, but, like, justify them.
I think the game that you're just praying won't be shit is Doom Eternal. I think that's the game that you're saying, please be good, please be good, please be good.
I have absolute faith in id Software to not fuck that up.
Well, you know, Rage 2. I mean, Rage 2 isn't bad. It's just not good.
Rage 2, like, I don't know what I think of Rage 2. I feel like...
Lift Tech Engine, you know?
I feel like that... I mean, it's straight up Mad Max with Doom mechanics.
Well, I will say this. You know, with all the problems that Bethesda's having right now, they need Doom Eternal more than we need Doom Eternal.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Yes.
Speaking of publishers, one of the things that people are really enjoying about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is the fact it's single player only. There are no loot boxes. It's just a game. It's a game. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. I've heard like people say it's really, 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 really good. I've heard people say it was not that great.
Here's the thing. I hear people saying that the first hour is awesome and then it gets into humdrum. Some people say that the lead character is Wet Sack, but then again, who isn't in a Star Wars game? There are very few interesting characters in Star Wars video games, to tell you the truth. Not even Kyle Katarn.
They need to make Baby Yoda playable.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Some people love fighting the Stormtroopers because they like the power fantasy, while other people think fighting Stormtroopers is boring. They love it later in the game when you start fighting with enemies who can actually take you out, you know, who give you a challenge. So here's the thing. You know, I think Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order will sell well. People will like it. I don't hear anybody actually hating it. You know, I hear people loving it. People saying, it's okay. But no one's saying, this real game sucks. Except for the people having these massive bugs on the PC version. But that's de rigueur now with the PC version of these games. You have to wait like a 2 months to get the bug-free version.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people doing really fun stuff with it. Like, yeah. I watched a guy go up against a stormtrooper, cut him, force push him off of a cliff, force yank him back, and then stab him, which is like, that's a little bit overkill for a Jedi, isn't it?
That's Starkiller sort of stuff. That's from the Starkiller games, damn it. I checked the game because I wanted to check his voice. Unfortunately, when I went to IMDb, it spoiled one character that's going to be in it. I didn't need to know that. I'm not going to say because I don't want to spoil for any other people. I haven't played the game. All I know is this character's in it. I'll give you a hint. This character has been in every Star Wars every Star Wars movie and game because they can't do anything without him. It's just annoying. It's like, can't you do it without him for once, please?
Baby Yoda.
Yes, it's Baby Yoda. Well, Baby Yoda was 900 years ago. Wouldn't he be around the Knights of the Old Republic times?
I've heard people making that argument. It's not Yoda. It's something from Yoda's species. No one cares. It's Baby Yoda.
No. Well, they had not Ben. Was his name Bendar? No. Oh, jeez, I forgot his name, and I used to know his name. They had a character from Yoda's species in the Star Wars The Old Republic game, and everybody in Yoda's species speaks normally. It's only him who speaks with a strange syntax, and it makes me think when he goes home, everybody looks at him. Maybe that's why he's isolated. Everybody on his home planet thinks he's a weirdo. Seriously, I think everybody on his home planet thinks he's a weirdo and can't stand him.
That's kind of sad.
But
poor Yoda.
Yeah, but like I said, it's nice to have a Star Wars game that doesn't suck for the first time in a long while. I mean, I haven't played Star Wars Battlefront 2, so I can't really talk about it. But I know a lot of people complain about it.
Yes, and that's because the Battlefront games, like the first,
the original Battlefront games that were mods, everybody has very fond feelings of. Yes. Which were done by DICE, too, or DICE's predecessor.
Talking very specifically about the new ones, though, they're boring. Yeah. They're super boring. They're very shallow, and they're very very loot boxy.
Well, here's the problem. The problem with the first game, at least that I know of, is that Electronic Arts wanted to make a game that would appeal to Star Wars fans and not video game players. And it was all tied in with The Force Awakens. And that was its biggest problem. That it just was so tied. We want to make a game that Star Wars fans will play. The thing is, this, every time someone says that, like when a comic book company says they want to attract non-comic book readers, my reaction is always, why? There's a reason why they don't want to read comic books, because they don't want to read comic books, and you're not going to convince them to read comic books, period.
Yeah, I don't have time for that. I don't want to read comics.
Why? I'm just saying, you know, so you want to appeal, you want a game to appeal to people who don't play video games? That's not possible, because they're not going to play video games no matter what. You're not going to trick them into playing video games.
And no, of course
not. You're going to be able to make them play, you know, Yahtzee on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, here's the thing. I play a lot of Yahtzee on my cell phone. I have 97 dice, damn it. And just so you know, if you want to buy that many, you have to spend $50.
That's a lot of bucks.
Yeah, so I earned that shit. I never spent. See, that's what I. Here's the thing. When you talk about microtransactions, there are games that do microtransactions really well. Injustice 2, the Plants vs. Zombies games, Halo 5. Here with Halo 5, I never paid a single dime for rec packs, even gold ones. I would play 3 big team battles. I'd earn enough in-game currency to buy a gold rec pack without having to spend a dime. That's how you do it. Spending money should be more like, oh, you know, I have a job and I really don't have the time to earn it. I'm just going to pay for a pack just to quickly get some stuff. And everybody gets the same shit, you know, or at least the same variants and shit, so it's not like pay to win. The same thing with Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. I never had to pay for anything. I just had to play a bit and not play that long, maybe an hour, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the one game that I've spent, oh, God, I'm an absolute whale on is Cooking Dash. I think I've spent over the past, 3 years, I think I've spent something like $300 to $400 on that thing. And it's a song.
Did you ever spend anything on Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare?
No. Like I said, I never paid a dime. Hmm. I play for an hour. I earn enough in-game money to buy the packs that I want. And what they're really good about, or at least Garden Warfare 2, was that they would give you the booster packs, right? And there are different types of booster packs, and each one costs a different much. So it'd be like, you know, I just want to get this plant booster pack. Or, you know, some of them, the really expensive ones, which you'd have to really work for, and it never felt like I was working for it because I was enjoying myself. If I wanted to get a whole new character, I don't know which character I would get. That's the part of having randomization, you know. But I would still get a character, even if I never used it. It's like, oh, okay. I wasted all that time getting something I don't need, but, you know, I don't care because I didn't spend any money on it. I only spent time. And from what I'm hearing, the new one, which is not called Garden Warfare 3, it's called something else, Battle for whatever. And whenever you say that, it always says, okay, so what that means is that they want this to be a live service and they're not going to put any sequels. They're just going to upgrade it constantly like they do with World of Warcraft. But what I'm hearing is that it's also the best of the game so far in terms of gameplay. So I'm waiting for the game, Gamefly to send it to me to see if I want to play it.
Battle for Neighborville. And yes, I've heard a lot of people say that it's really, really, really good. Like, they didn't skimp on anything that made the other games good, and they improved upon it a little bit.
The only thing that gave me pause was that I heard that they streamlined the characters you can play, which can be either good or bad, you know? From what I'm hearing, it's generally good, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other thing, is that Garden Warfare, it's Battlefield. It's everything Battlefield is, just a little bit cuter. And if EA really wanted to bring Battlefield back, they would take the Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare game and just make it gritty and with human characters. Because it's everything that people who play Battlefield want. And here's the thing. I find myself preferring to be a cactus. For those who don't know, the cactus is the sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And the sniping works in this game. It doesn't feel overpowered. I don't feel overpowered because guess what? They can go find me. And what I like is that you shoot off a little drone that basically you can shoot from. So you have a drone and you have a drone view. You shoot. But the problem with that is that you're vulnerable because you're not aware of anything around you. You know, and they can shoot down your drone too. I'm not going to get into... Look, Garden Warfare is one of the best games, what's it called, that you can play right now that very few people know about. I suggest playing it because it's fun. It's a fun multi. It's the only multiplayer game that I regularly played for a long time.
We haven't even gotten to news yet.
I know. Fuck this. We're gonna talk about games, damn it. We're talking about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, and it's bad that neither of us have played it because my next Gamefly theme is gonna be Toy Story 4. They're sending me a movie.
You know what else I've been playing the shit out of actually? The Outer Worlds, and I'm still having a really good time with it.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I quit on the Outer Worlds. I just had enough of it.
I got to Cascadia, and it delighted me.
Here's the thing, is that I think I am really over Fallout. I am really, really over Fallout. I don't care if they improve Fallout. I just don't want to play Fallout anymore, and that's basically what the Outer Worlds is. It's Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Fallout New Order, basically.
You know what always delighted me about the Fallout games?
Yeah.
The unique monsters, like the named monsters. There's like the ones that are like the normal ones of the species, and then there's like the terrifyingly strong ones. Yeah. Like in Fallout 4, it was the mutated crab queen.
Oh, her. Ugh, yeah.
She was terrifying. And then there
terrifying.
Was...
I mean, here she was... I was able to game her really well because I knew she was coming, so I just mined the fuck out of the beach. I mined that shit until there was no more mines left.
If you didn't know about her, you come around the corner and see that thing for the first time.
It's kind of obvious what's going to happen. They actually tell you she's coming.
Sure, but you come around the corner for the first time and see that thing, and it's like, ew, ew, ew. Shoots acid at you. She has those big claws. She's awful. So in the Outer Worlds, I feel like they've done a good job with that. Like they've done a good job with unique monsters. There's a place called Cascadia, and they warn you against landing on it. It's like basically you want to land on the other side of this. It's on this planet called Monarch, and your goal is to get a nav key so you can land on quote unquote the safe side of the planet. And then there's Cascadia, to which everybody says, if you land there, you'll die within 15 feet of the landing pad. Which, if you're underleveled, you will, because there's like five mobs right outside of the landing pad that all have named monsters that will just like bum rush you and annihilate you and your friends. And I kind of love that, because like once I finally got leveled up enough...
Got it.
I love that because I got leveled up enough eventually. Well, first I tested it out. I went down there under level just to see how bad it was, and I was impressed. It killed the crap out of me. But I have my... But I do the sleazy player method of playing the game where I save the game before each fight and then just test and tease.
That's smart. Come on.
I test and tease to see just like how far I can inch my way in or cheese the monsters. And so like I got an idea of it. And it's like Cascadia and the place you need to go are like a good 1,000 kilometers away. So it's a long stretch of terrifying monsters all the way to it. And it's just kind of cool. It's an actual gauntlet of death. And once you get leveled up enough, it's like Loot City. It's a trail of gold.
Okay.
You get all sorts of good weapons, get all sorts of good gear, you get all sorts of wonderful experience, and you kill a whole bunch of monsters on the way.
Reminds me of that line from War, you know, go to a foreign country, kill interesting people.
It was so fun that I leveled up to the point where I got the nav key for the safe side of the planet, and I still landed in Cascadia just to take that romp. So I'm not like that's.
I'm glad you had fun with it.
I've always liked the sci-fi monsters of like the Fallout games. I've liked the way they put things together. I like the way they do with their creatures. It's fun and amusing to me to just like see what kind of horrible monstrosities they come up with.
I'm glad you're enjoying it because, like I said, I've burned out on Fallout. I just can't. You know, here's the thing though. It makes me really looking forward to seeing what Obsidian will do for Microsoft. When they have Microsoft says, "Here's some money, go do what you want."
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, like, I will admit the story, I'm okay with it. It's so-so, and it has that same Fallout problem where once you get to a certain level and you have a certain set of weapons, you just feel OP, like. I have a sniper rifle that does shock damage, and if I shoot anything in the head with it, it does a super ton of damage because I'm a scientist that does extra shock damage. So I feel over – like it's, I'm only like – I got a – I feel like I only got to like the second major milestone in the game, and I already feel stronger than everything around me.
That could be good or bad. I don't mind having a power fantasy, to tell you the truth. I don't mind having a power fantasy, you know, just going in and saying – you know, between me and that door, everything's going to die.
Yes, but I feel like at a certain point, if there's no feasible threat to my existence, then I start to feel unchallenged.
Well, not me. I mean, but then again, you know, I'm a story person, so that's the other thing. You know, the other thing that lost me was I was just not interested in finding out what happens to these characters.
Yeah, everybody loves Parvati, and she's great, but...
Everybody loves her in-game.
Yes.
But then again, she's the first person, your first companion, so it's obvious that they're going to, you know, make it easier on you. You know what I mean? So that you didn't actually pick up an asshole that everybody hates.
Yeah, and there's a couple of those. Vicar Max and... Felix, they're both exactly that type.
So anyway, let's talk about the news. The news. I know. Well, actually, not the news. We have a gaming flashback. So this one will be quick. Gaming flashback. Burnout Paradise. Burnout Paradise is an open world racing game developed by Criterion Games and published by EA for the PS3, Xbox 360, and Microsoft Windows. It was released on the PlayStation Store and via Xbox Live Marketplace's Games on Demand. It was later added to the libraries of greatest hits and platinum hits titles and was made backward compatible with the Xbox One in November 2016. It is the first game in the Burnout series to be released on Microsoft Windows. Paradise's gameplay is set in the fictional Paradise City, an open world in which players can compete in several types of races. Players can also compete online, which includes additional game modes, such as cops and robbers, several free... Oh, damn it, hold on. Several free game updates introduce new features, such as time of day cycle and motorcycles. The game also featured a paid downloadable content in the form of new cars and the fictional Big Surf Island. The game was very well received upon release, with an aggregate scores on Game Rankings reporting on an average score of 88%, and Metacritic also doing 88. The game won several awards in 2008, with Spike TV, Game Trailers, and GameSpot awarding it Best Driving Game. Reviewers felt the game had an excellent sense of speed and praised the open-world gameplay as a first for the Burnout series. A remastered version, titled Burnout Paradise Remastered, which includes all of the DLC except for the Time Savers Pack, and support for higher-resolution displays, was released in March 2018 for the PS4 and the Xbox One, and on August 2018 for Windows via Origin. On April 17, 2019, Criterion announced via Twitter that an online service for the original version of the game would be disabled on August 31st of that same year, which sucks, because basically this game is all about the online for the most part. TJ? Hello?
Sorry, I had myself muted. Yeah, I mean, like, if you don't have the online component of a mostly online game, then you have, like, half to a quarter of a game.
So, the other thing is that I didn't really like Burnout Paradise. It was okay. But as a Burnout fan, I wanted set tracks and set pieces. I didn't like having to go around the city, going at full speed, then inevitably crashing. It just, the open world didn't work for me. I'm pretty sure it worked for other people. I just didn't like it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of exactly what. I think Burnout 3 was the one that I played the most.
Mm. That's the one that a lot of people. There was also the Burnout game. The one that came after 3 was actually a name game. Burnout Revenge. That's the one I played the most.
Yeah. Like, I remember getting together with my buddies, and we would do all the crashing
minigames. Yeah, that was my favorite part of Burnout Revenge, was doing Crash. For those who don't know, that's a thing in which you have your car, and you just rev it up to full speed, and then when you get to a bunch either cars on a highway or cars on a – you just make yourself explode and try to take out as many cars as possible. And if you got enough points, you could explode again, and you could have your car – you could aim your car as it flew through the air. And there was nothing like getting just – because even when you stop, sometimes there would still be cars crashing because they didn't know how to stop. That was my favorite mode, was the crash mode.
Yeah, and like the challenges that they had set up for it were just a blasty blast, like just all the wreckage that you could do in one go. I loved it. That was easily my favorite, the most memorable thing about the Burnout series to me. The racing was still good, but I'll say the racing was like probably one of the standard setters for the arcade racing experience. Like, there hasn't really been anything quite – people have tried to do things as good as Burnout, but I don't think anyone's ever actually reached that level.
I mean, they had the spiritual successor, Dangerous Driving, which didn't do it for me. But what did do it for me was the pack-in. They included a mode called Danger Zone. I played Danger Zone 2, which was the crash mode all by itself, and that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, like – I just feel like at the height of its popularity, no one has ever done quite what Burnout like 3 and Revenge did.
And Danger Zone actually does what Crash does, at the very least. So there's that at least. So if you want to re-experience the Crash mode as it should be, try Danger Zone.
Yeah. I actually haven't played Dangerous Driving.
Not Dangerous Driving, Danger Zone. There's actually separate games. The Xbox Game Pass version came packed with Danger Zone 2. I would say forget Dangerous Driving and just play Danger Zone 2.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, just that, because it does the crash mode perfectly. Anyways, we're going to move on to the game news, which is basically dull. What we've been talking about is more, you know, we're going to skip the end. Okay, well, actually, we'll do Anthem. The first game news, Anthem reportedly set for a major overhaul as BioWare looks to reboot its troubled game. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. According to Kotaku's Jason Schreier, plans to overhaul the Troubleshooter have been in the works for some time. Eurogamer has previously heard similar word from its own sources. Kotaku says the project is referred to as both Anthem Next and Anthem 2.0, and is, as those names suggest, the scope of BioWare's intended plans are substantial, with the developer reportedly leaving little untouched. Changes to loot, quests, difficulty, progression, the world map, social events, and possibly the entire game structure have all been mooted. According to one source, BioWare teams in both Austin and Edmonton have been spending several months, quote-unquote, just tearing Anthem down and figuring out what's needed to change fundamentally a lot. Work on implementing those changes is said to have been ongoing for months, too. Although specifics are still hazy, a source said there's a lot of testing out and experimentation, but still nothing concrete. One person told Kotaku that BioWare may attempt to separate its map into smaller chunks to enable the team to play around with each one more freely without the constant worry of introducing map-wide bugs. Do you know what this reminds me of? Do you remind me of when they took Final Fantasy XIV and just said, this entire thing sucks, and they rebuilt it from the ground up?
Yeah, and now it's like one of the most popular MMOs out there.
So I think that's what BioWare is doing. It's doing a Final Fantasy XIV.
Do you think they're good enough to do a Final Fantasy XIV, though?
It's BioWare. Here's the thing. This might have given BioWare the clout to tell EA, listen, assholes, we're going to do what we want this time, and keep your grubby fingers away from us.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, it.
You know what?
For lack
People
of better terms.
People did not buy Anthem. Money is involved. And if there's one way to get a publisher to pay attention, take away their money, because EA invested a crap ton in this game. A crap ton. I mean, this is bigger than Mario is for Nintendo, Anthem. They made it. They just took all their teams. They pulled the teams working on Mass Effect Andromeda's DLC off that to work on this. You know, from what I understand, there were other games that were. Well, actually, no, the opposite was true. I mean, FIFA stole developers from Anthem. So maybe they finally have their guys back. But yeah, I mean, Frostbite just isn't very good for this type of game. Just Frostbite and FIFA screwed it over.
I feel like... And I could be wrong. I would totally admit I was wrong if they came back with an Anthem that looked cool and fun and playable. I feel like this is polishing a turd.
I don't know. If you're tearing it all down, you're throwing away the turd. So the turd's not there. This isn't like No Man's Sky.
In
which they kept on upgrading the same. Actually, they tore down the original version of No Man's Sky and built a new one. If there's a reason, if you got it on disc, the game that was on the disc was not the game you played. You download something that would erase everything that was from the disc and just do a straight download.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, but they still kept on iterating on No Man's Sky. They're not iterating here. They're just taking and chucking it out the window and saying, we're going to make a different Anthem. Maybe it'll have some of the same models. That's about it.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I guess if they're just going to completely make a new Anthem game from the bottom up, it could be... It couldn't be worse, I don't think. I could be wrong, though.
Like I said, EA... They told EA, or EA told them, listen, get this right. We don't care anymore. Just have people buy it. We'll know they're serious if you don't have to buy Anthem 2.0. If it's just like a free update for people who already own it, like they did with No Man's Sky did. I mean, all the No Man's Sky DLC. You know, you had No Man's Sky Beyond, which I think is the final iteration they're ever going to do on that game. It was not a separate game. It was just a patch for that game, which changed the game completely. So we'll see.
Yeah, I suppose so. That is interesting. Like, it's interesting to think of how many times game companies have done that with a game, though. It's a very, very small selection of games that can actually get away with something like that, just scrapping the whole thing and rebuilding it from the bottom up.
I don't know. like I said, it's not my kind of game. You know, I've never been into stuff like, The Division, or I tried Fallout 76. Here's the thing: Fallout 76, and I played the launch version, wasn't bad per se. But then again, maybe I didn't play it enough, and I didn't have all that many expectations. Obviously, it didn't hold my interest, but I didn't think it was terrible. But I don't know. I'm just not into that kind of game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about a happier game. Next item.
All right. Minecraft Dungeons will be supported long-term with a mix of free updates and paid DLC from PC Games N. Minecraft Dungeons is going to keep changing post-launch with a steady stream of free updates, the possibility of new narrative in the form of paid DLC, and other new content meant to keep players interested in having fun. Players for DLC haven't been nailed down yet, but the developers of Minecraft Dungeons say they want to make sure that anything they feel they make feels worth the time and potentially money they'd be asking players to spend on it. I think we're looking for a mix of free and paid new content, said Mojang executive producer David Nisagin, speaking at XO19. Since it's a narrative game, if it's something that someone will want to pay for, it needs to be something that has a big update, something that feels good, like good value for money, a fun experience. But Nisagin also says the team also wants to continually update the game to keep it interesting, as well as bug-free if possible. We also want to make sure that we continue to update the game and provide players with improvements in reducing friction, fixing bugs should there ever be a bug the game should there ever be a bug the game, he said, grinning. But then also, if we find cool things that we want to add, sure, he said. We will do that by free updates. Minecraft itself has grown massively over the last 10 years, adding new mobs, creatures, blocks, and mechanics at a more or less steady pace since it launched. As Minecraft Dungeons game director Mans Olsen pointed out, it's a rich source of content to, well, mine from. Free updates could also include things like ridiculously overpowered magical items, and the developers have said they're fine with those since they're fun.
Yeah. There's nothing here changing from how Minecraft's been treated for the past, under Microsoft anyway. I mean, it's nice to hear. It's sort of like what they did with Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 with EA. But I'm still looking forward to it, and it's on Game Pass, so I'll probably play it. And hopefully it'll be better than Diablo.
It's a cash cow, but it's like a cash cow that Xbox continues to massage and feed wholesome ingredients and just, like, cherish and love.
Yeah, here's the thing. People don't seem to understand just how big Minecraft is. That is a cash cow that you do not want to fuck with.
Mm-hmm. And they just – I'm like, this isn't even talking about the fact they just put out the beta for Minecraft Earth in America, which is –
yeah, that's right.
Which is the mobile game, which is sort of like build it up in your own living room. It's interesting. I played a little bit of it, and it's like a very interesting mix of like Pokemon Go mechanics with Minecraft sensibilities.
You want to know – here's something that in 2018 – gamers spent $110 million on purchases within the mobile version of Minecraft alone.
Yeah. And I think with Minecraft Earth, they're just going to be continuing to go with that because it's an extremely interesting concept they've come up with there where you build – like you go and build something in the environment around you and just use the AR functionality of your own phone to just fiddle with things and make Minecraft stuff.
Here's the thing, like I said, this is not something that Microsoft wants to screw, because this could be a platform unto itself, basically. If, Minecraft is a platform.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell it's a platform because Microsoft still continues to make it for the PlayStation consoles and the Switch consoles and everybody else. Although I will say, the PlayStation version is not getting some of the content that the Microsoft and PC versions are getting in terms of, in terms of mobs, and not mobs, but, skins and stuff like that. Not that
Yeah. Any
people are that into skins.
Yeah. I mean, it's It's so modular. You can do anything you feel like doing with Minecraft. You can do anything. Like they're basically taking Minecraft and building new games with Minecraft. It's still Minecraft, but they're just doing different things with it. Well, let's build a Minecraft Diablo. Let's build a Minecraft Pokemon Go. And then that's just what the company Mojang itself is doing with the game. And that's not even including the massive amount of stuff that players have been doing for over a decade now, right? Yeah.
Let's talk about another version of Minecraft. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is coming to Steam, and this comes from PC Gamer. Dragon Quest Builders 2 will make its long-awaited PC debut on December 10th. Arriving a year after it was released in Japan on the PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch, to very positive reviews, the PC version of Dragon Quest Builders 2 will come with all the DLC that's included with the PS4 Season Pass, including the Hotto Stuff Pack, the Aquarium Pack, and the Modernist Pack, with new recipes, hairstyles, clothing, and areas to explore. Unfortunately for those who missed out on the first game, Square Enix emphasized that Dragon Quest Builders 2, quote, is a completely standalone experience featuring new characters, an expansive world, unlimited building combinations, and a storyline that's sure to satisfy longtime fans and newcomers alike. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is available for pre-purchase on Steam for $60. Prior to buying it prior to January 6th, which is basically, it looks like 3 weeks after release, we'll also get you a bunch of bonus customization content, including the ornamental medicinal herb recipe, the Dragon Quest logo recipe, and the ornamental chimera wing recipe. 5 sigil block recipes for building decorative blocks with sun, stars, moon, water, and soul motifs, the legendary line art recipe, and the low-res luminary recipes. So, yeah, too bad Scott isn't here to gush over Dragon Quest Builders 2, so I guess we'll just have to have you do it.
What a wonderful game. I love Dragon Quest Builders. It's Minecraft with more story, which I guess is what they're trying to go for with Minecraft Dungeons, but like I really do love the style of Dragon Quest Builders.
Minecraft Dungeons seems less to me like Dragon Quest Builders 2 from what little I've played of it, and more like we're going to do a roguelike much like Diablo instead.
Uh-huh.
You know, while Dragon Quest Builders 2 is more of a Minecraft meets Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Dragon Quest, I wouldn't say Pokemon so much as, like, it's Dragon Quest. It's a JRPG mixed with Minecraft elements. It's literally like a hack-and-slash adventure that feels, yeah, I guess, almost a little Zelda-ish, but not as, like, confined as Zelda is.
Minecraft Dungeons seems going to be less about it looks like there will be building, you know, but it's going to be basically a skin of Diablo on Minecraft with some changes, you know. It isn't going to be as built, because here's the thing, you know, people already build stuff with Minecraft, you know, they don't need to do it with Minecraft Dungeon. That's a completely different thing. Although I wonder if you'll be able to import stuff from Minecraft into Minecraft Dungeon. That would be the interesting thing.
Yes. I don't know if they'll do that, but it sounds like they have a plan to keep the game going well beyond its launch, so that's good. I kind of wish they would do that with Dragon Quest Builders. There's plenty to do in Dragon Quest Builders, but it is a finite game. There is an end to it, and it's basically, once you get to that point, you can kind of just do what you want. But at the same time, it sounds like Minecraft Dungeons is looking at the long con, I guess. And that's always cool. It's cool to see that they're going to support. I mean, it's of course they're going to support it because it's Minecraft, but it's cool they actually have interest in keeping up with this side project and making it like its own quality thing.
Getting back to Minecraft, one of the things, I think I said it already, but, you know, the idea of constantly pumping out content for Minecraft Dungeons, they're pretty much used to that with Minecraft. I don't know if it's going to be any extra effort except for the fact it's a second game.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know how much assets they're going to create uniquely for the game, but I also can't imagine that it's incredibly hard to create assets for Minecraft.
We'll see, because, you know, they canceled the super, you know, the super graphics pack, because I think they're going to start incorporating the ray tracing into Minecraft as part of an update. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, Minecraft already has a base. You know, it has a 10-year-old base of doing stuff in it. It's also part of Game Pass. Here's the thing about that, though. I avoid Minecraft. I avoid Animal Crossing. I avoid those kind of games because they're just time sinks that I don't want to have to time sink into. Some people can spend hours on end building the perfect thing. I'm not like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not what Kerbal Space Program 2 is aimed at. I'm not space. And, you know, Kerbal Space Program 2 is probably, if I was into that game, I would chuck Dragon Quest Builders and I would chuck Minecraft and I would look straight at the sequel to Kerbal Space Program. Because what they're doing with that game is just absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Even more incredible than original Kerbal Space Program. And it almost makes me want to play it. But I already know what kind of game it's going to be, so I'm not gonna fall for that trap. You hear me? I'm not gonna fall for that trap. I'm not gonna fall for Animal Crossing, because if I leave it alone for 2 weeks, I'm gonna come back to the town. It's gonna be riots all over the place, and all the animals will be suffering, and they'll be accusing me of abandoning them. You know, like a dead Tamagotchi.
Oh, those poor creatures.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I like State of Decay 2 more than State of Decay 1, because the game keeps playing when you're not playing it. I come back to State of Decay 1, my people have all been massacred by zombies because I didn't go back to them in time. That's not my idea of fun. That's other people's idea of fun. I don't want real-time zombies. At least State of Decay 2 respects my time. So, yeah. But, you know what? Dragon Quest Builders 2, we have two people who love the game. I played it a little bit. I actually played it before you two, because I played it at... I didn't play it at E3. Or did I play it at E3? Either I played it at E3 or at PAX East. I think I played it at PAX East. Because I didn't go to E3 this past year. So... Oh, no, I did play it at E3. E3 2018, right. So, yeah, I played that. I also played Dragon Quest XI, which made... Scott very jealous, and I told him, you know, you're gonna love this, even from what little I played of it.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I spent playing that game, I got lost in it for long periods of time, and I think the only reason I stopped playing it was because I wanted to play other games, and that game takes up, it's easy to lose track of time with Dragon Quest Builders, as I'm sure it's easy to do with Minecraft. And it's just like, before you know it, it's like 4 hours later, and I'm like just sitting there harvesting things when I look at the time and be like, what? It's 4 a.m. Where did the time go?
Okay, before we go, I want to talk about something else that you play. I don't know if you still play it. I know you still pay attention to it, but have you seen the new updates for Rainbow Six Siege? They're coming with limb penetration now.
Yes. The game continues to grow. It's Rainbow Six Siege is so good, and I'm happy to see. Yep, and that game is about to garner it got nominated for 2 game awards as well. One for community support, which awesome. Yes, I would say like Ubisoft Montpellier, they listen to their fans so well. Which is weird for Ubisoft, because nobody else in Ubisoft does that. At least not as well as what the team working on Siege does, from what I can see.
Well, like I said, here's the thing. I said this 3 years ago, and I'm going to say it again. Ubisoft is really invested in Rainbow Six Siege as an esport. They wanted to own that shit, and they're doing everything they can to make it attractive. You know, and people who did not like Siege at all are now playing it. I'm not, because it's not my thing, but, you know.
Yeah, it's so cool how much they put into that, and it's well-deserving of the accolades it's got. It still has a robust esports scene, It still has a constantly growing like roster. It still has constantly growing content. Like Overwatch and Destiny and Apex Legends are good, but I don't think they're as good as Rainbow Six Siege and what and how much effort they put into that game.
I mean, they put a lot of thought into it. So for those who don't know, the penetration rules are like there are three types of penetration. One is no penetration. It hits a body part. It will not pass through to hit other body parts. Simple penetration will be it'll hit a body part and potentially hit another body part of the first same hit appendage of the same operator. And full penetration is that it goes through one person and hits the other guy. And the types of guns that you have will determine. Like shotguns have no penetration, machine pistols have no penetration, assault rifles and pistols, and you know they have and revolvers have simple penetration. Sniper rifles and various marksman rifles will have full penetration. So, you know, it's just another factor that's going to be taken into. And I'm pretty sure when you have a gun that's able to go through one person and into the other, it's going to cause some interesting strategies.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a character that's, like, straight up the dedicated sniper of the game. Yeah. And that character has a high-powered rifle. And I have a feeling that that character is going to become very, very, very much meta after
I think a lot of people are going to be avoiding staying too close together now.
Uh-huh. When you have a guy that can shoot through two people and kill them both, then that guy is going to become much more popular.
Especially since there's a limited number of people who are playing in the match as well. This is not like 50 people on each side. I think, what is it, like 3 or 4, I think, per side?
Yeah, it's four. It's four? No, 5 operators per
right.
side.
So if you take out 2 of them, that's almost half their team right there.
Mm-hmm. And because there's no respawning.
Yeah, and if you take out, say, the person who's able to look through walls, you know, that's going to hurt your team big time.
Majorly, yeah.
So, anyways, like I said, Rainbow Six Siege keeps on rolling along. Season 4 is coming up, and it's called Shifting Tides. I just wanted to get that out there because we were talking all about... you know, stuff that Scott really loves, and he's not here to talk about it. So we have to talk about something that DJ really loves.
Have you seen... do you care at all about the Game Awards?
No, not really. I have my own Game Awards, actually, so those are coming up. The Game Awards I care about are the ones that I do. Not
yeah, fair enough.
So we're coming to that point of year in which... we're going to be doing our awards, and how we do it on Gaming Podcast is we just make up awards, you know, games that pissed me off the least, you know, whatever award you want to do, or game that had the best music, whatever, you know, just make up an award and just give it to whatever games you want. On Gaming Podcast, I think I'm actually going to do what I used to do with Game Stooge, and that is actually have full awards with technical and artistic awards and stuff like that again.
Mm-hmm.
Involve some research, and there's only going to be one voter, me. But at least it'll be those who usually get the hits.
Yeah, that was fun last year. I look forward to it.
I have to look for that episode. It's on my hard drive somewhere. Like I said, I got my new computers. I sent you a picture of it, and you know, someone else told me because the graphic card, or not the graphic card, but the motherboard has something that flashes, and they remarked it looked a lot like a flux capacitor. And he says, "Do you have 1.21 gigawatts powering that thing?" My response was, "You know, when it gets up to 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit." Seriously, I have the glowiest computer ever.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, even my. Even my RAM cards are glowing on their own. I don't know how that happened, but my T-Force cards glow, and they cycle through colors.
Neat.
And I have a glass panel, so I see all of it going on.
Yep. Well, that's rad. I know that you were dealing with a really shoddy – was it a laptop or was it a PC?
The laptop – here's the thing. The laptop was basically bare bones. You know, it slowed down pretty fast. I'm probably going to have to get a system mechanic for this too at some point, but it hasn't slowed down yet. Like I said, at some point I'm going to buy another one of the graphic cards to bump it up to 24 gigabytes RAM. Just because. I have the 1660 NVIDIA card in there, the GTX. So technically this is VR ready.
Nice.
As I said last 2 weeks ago, I am not shelling out $600 for a VR headset. I'm not. I don't need it that much. Maybe if someone wants to gift it to me. By the way, I still have the year of Xbox PC Xbox Game Pass for PC, but Scott's not here, so I can't give it to him. I'd rather give it to him when he's actually able to speak, so I want to hear his reaction. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And we will see you next week, and hopefully Scott will be here. He won't make a little cameo in the beginning and then vanish.
Yep. Well, have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.